Hi, this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition, taking the shine off the tofurkey. Okay, Manton, happy post-Thanksgiving. I guess we're recording now the Monday after Thanksgiving. Are you feeling nice and grateful for your life and your presumably giant meal last week?
Yes, giant meal. And yeah, I had a mostly relaxing weekend. We spent time with family, had a good time. And I'm not sure I'm coming back completely refreshed, but it was good to have some time off.
One of the things I like about, well, as you know, I'm a vegetarian, so there's kind of this big Thanksgiving thing with the turkey that doesn't really meet my standards. Yeah. But one of the things I like about Thanksgiving is it's non-religious. It's it's sectarian. It is very American, so it sort of excludes everybody else in the world. But hey, who cares? Yeah. Who cares about that? Oh, is this an international podcast?
Yes.
But what I do like about it is it may be, can you help me out here? It may be the least controversial American holiday.
I think that's true. Because every other holiday has some religious component or, yeah, something that maybe not everyone would participate in.
I think there is a small, probably valid criticism that comes up about it sort of being a celebration of our dominion over the indigenous American natives.
Hmm. Okay.
So that's like, oh, well, that just took the shine off of the tofurkey. But for the most part, it is, I think, you know, you don't feel like you ever like at Christmas time or something, you're like at the checkout at the supermarket and you're like, happy winter festivity of your choosing. Yeah. And you don't really feel like there's not a high chance of like putting your foot in your mouth to just say happy Thanksgiving to somebody.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So I take it back. I take it back. I just realized, of course, popped into my head, the least controversial holiday has to be New Year's Day.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, there are those like anti progression of time people, but anyway, happy Thanksgiving to you, Manton. I know that you alluded to earlier that you didn't come back completely refreshed, and I suspect that this has something to do with the fact that as we were trying to wrap up our pre-Thanksgiving podcast last week, I got this note from you, something like, half of Watermark's customers can't log in.
Yeah.
I think, and then you discovered that, what was it? You had a database failure?
Yeah. This was the day before Thanksgiving, luckily. If it had been actually Thanksgiving or the day after, it would have been even more annoying. But yeah, Wednesday morning last week, I got a note from a customer said I can't log in. And I tried to log in. And of course, everything was fine for me, which is a side effect to how I've built the app, where I've done so-called sharding, where you separate, certain customers into certain clumps, of customers in a different databases. And he was in a different database, and I didn't notice the problem. Of course, I didn't have enough alerts to tell me that there was a problem fast enough, but I dug into a little more. And at first, this was right after we had talked about security and passwords and being hacked. And I logged in and I fired up the MySQL console, and like the tables were gone. And if my first thought after we had talked about security was like, I've been hacked. Someone figured out how to get
you
in here.
Manton Reese. You think you're so good?
Exactly. Well, and I was like, it serves me right. Talking about security, thinking I sort of have a handle on this, and of course, I get bit by it. Of course, I dug a little more, and it turned out, no, that wasn't the case. It was some kind of drive failure. And these are all the database stuff, all my search indexes are on Amazon's infrastructure, and they're EBS volumes, which are really cool and flexible. If anyone ever does cloud server stuff, I think this is one of the nicest things about doing something with Amazon or Rackspace or one of these others, as opposed to a more traditional hosted server, because it's really flexible. You can set up these drives in any you know, capacity you want, and you can move them between server instances. You can do snapshots and back them up and restore them. It's really flexible. And supposedly, according to Amazon, they're also really reliable, even more reliable than like a traditional just hard drive failure rate.
Okay.
But of course, you know, I got hit something. I don't know what happened, but it failed. And then I had to scramble and try to figure out what was wrong. And it was one of those annoying problems where, yeah, I should have been able to fairly quickly restore. But then something else went wrong and, you know, one of my instances wasn't responding, couldn't SSH into it anymore. And it just kind of trickled badly from there, causing other problems. And at the end of the day, I ended up just doing a full restore of all the databases, even the ones that weren't having a problem. And I moved them to a faster server instances at the same time. So, yeah, it was an annoying, frustrating time. And the biggest downtime I've ever had by far.
So you had to restore from a backup. So I guess you lost some amount of users. Or is that stuff that you just recollect?
I recollect it, yeah. I still am going through and seeing if there's any holes that I need to fill in. But the way I designed it was I will do backup. Let's say I'll do backups like once a day, like a full archive of the database. And I store those off for a month or whatever. And then the idea is that I would, let's say I'm down for a couple hours and I have to restore from a backup 2 hours ago, the system is smart enough to just resume where it was and it'll like catch up. So like if there's been like 1,000 tweets since the backup, it'll just catch up and get the rest of them. So when I bring the system back up, it won't be completely current, but it'll very quickly catch up. So that's the idea. I was down so long that I'm actually still kind of going back and making sure that everything looks good.
So the only thing you would lose is if you had new user registrations, would those be completely lost?
It'd be difficult to register if the system's down.
Oh, of course. That makes sense.
Yeah. In this case, in terms of databases, I have a lot of MySQL stuff for like the big storage of tweets and app.net posts. And then I have a whole bunch of other stuff in Redis, which is this in-memory store that's really great, and it persists to disk as well. But it was really designed to be super fast, you know, load everything in memory. And actually, I do a bunch, like all the TweetMarker API stuff is purely Redis, so it's all in memory, it's all very fast. And I also do a bunch of customer data and metadata in that. So actually, since that was up the whole time,
You
know, that might have saved me a little bit of headache with customer data.
So you basically had a replay of my experience the previous week with my surprise, App Store crashing bug. But yours happened the day before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, great timing.
And you traveled for Thanksgiving, right? So,
yep.
And what was great about last week's episode is Manton ended up editing the show in the car while his wife drives along down the road, down the Texas highway where last week's show was born. And but the good news is, Manton, that when you were, after you were done furiously scrambling to figure out what was wrong, of course, everything was in your control to update and redeploy your product. You didn't have to wait or ask anybody for an expedited review. You were just back in business.
Yep. It's, the good and the bad of running your own servers, deploying your own apps, whatever,
right,
is you can do whatever you want and you can ship at any time. But of course, when things go wrong, there's no one else to blame but yourself.
Something to be thankful and resentful about all at the same time. And I think that is pretty much the moral of Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah, I guess
you're
so.
Supposed to be very thankful and extremely resentful at the same time. It's sort of an attempt to maximize the burn rate on both sides of that candle. So good job, Manton. You've done well your country and the rest of the world. You'll just have to wonder what this Thanksgiving thing is all about.
Well, to wrap it up, you know, I learned some things. Every time something bad happens, you know, I learned something. There's a lot I can do better. And hopefully if I have some failures like this in the future, I'll be able to much, much more quickly get back into business.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm glad you're back up and running. And hopefully you won't have any surprises the day before winter holiday celebration of your choosing.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Well, we are excited again to be sponsored this week by Nucleos, a tool set of native iOS controls brought to you by the UI and UX experts at Infragistics. Built for performance and style, Nucleos maximizes your ability to create elegant, highly responsive iPhone and iPad applications. Nucleos's data visualization capabilities are unparalleled. Render iOS charts with hundreds of thousands of data points capable of millisecond updates, sparing nothing to achieve lightning speed. The Nucleos grid control can handle massive volumes of data and output brilliant, meaningful data visualizations. Take advantage of a powerful API that is familiar to all iOS developers. Nucleos will thrill you to the core. Find out more at infragistics/iOS. Now, Manton, this week, before the show, I ended up downloading and trying out their iOS sample app. I think you had tried it out last week. I hadn't tried it out. Yeah. I just assumed that it would be, you know, not much more than what I could figure out by looking at the SDK and the website. But man, this is the way to figure out what this framework can do, because they just have everything it packed into this free App Store app that's kind of like a developer reference and example app. So you know last week we mentioned that a lot of the functionality is their charts stuff.
Yeah.
Their grid view is actually really impressive too. And what I was impressed by is the examples show you things that are a lot of things that are just like solutions to common developer desires on iOS, like pull to refresh, for example, is one of their built-in like automatic behaviors. So a lot of this stuff, I was just cruising through the app thinking, oh yeah, that's something that if I had to do that, then it would take some time and it would take some number of hours to develop and test. And it looks like if I just, you know, if it works for me to use this Nucleos grid view, then I get that for free. The demo app is also cool, I thought, because it has a little like page curl thing where you tap it and it shows you the source code right there for the for the demo that you're looking at. And it just looks like a nice little reference for the framework.
Cool stuff. Thanks again for sponsoring the show. And we said last week we were going to give one of these away, a license to the SDK. And we picked a winner from our followers today. So if you have been following Core Intuition on Twitter for a while, thank you. If you just followed, you know, welcome. We post, obviously, the new episodes every week that come out. And every once in a while, we'll post some other tidbit about the podcast. So the winner this week is Mitch Cohen. Congratulations. You won a copy of this. And I don't know if we've contacted him on Twitter yet, but we will get him the license code to this. And next week, we'll give another one away. So if you want to follow at Corint on Twitter, we'll pick another winner next Monday. And we'll let you know if you won.
Congratulations, Mitch. Now, I have to say, Manton, this was not rigged, but Mitch is one of our local Boston Cocoa Heads. So I'll have to ask him at the next meeting if he gives it a try, what he thinks of the Nucleos stuff.
Cool. Yeah, not rigged. We, if people are curious, we just pulled up a list of all our followers and did a random number from the top to the bottom, and he came up.
And Manton picked the number, so this is proof that I'm right. Not involved in rigging this for Boston Cocoa Heads. However, next week, if Boston Cocoa Heads wins again, I will admit there will be some suspicion.
Yeah, well, the nice thing is we actually know a bunch of these people that follow the account, so I don't know what the chances of us picking someone we know, but
right.
It's probably some percentage. So anyway, thanks again, everybody, for listening.
And thanks to Infragistics. You can find out more again at infragistics.com/iOS.
All right, we have a new listener question today. This is from Frank Greif. He asks, what's the pros and cons of distributing your application via ZIP or DMG now that Apple have clipped the wings of DMG distribution? And he went on an email to talk a little bit about some problems he's run into with DMG. But overall, this is something I thought about a while back, and I decided to go just with ZIP. I used to love making DMG files and like having a nice little layout where, you know, you have your app icon and then you have like a background that says like drag this to the applications folder. And it seemed all kind of nice and user-friendly, but DMG had a few problems for me. One is it's harder to create them unless you automate everything once you've got the basic setup, which of course most people probably do. It's harder to create them. It's kind of a little bit weird for the user because they have to unmount it when they're done. Also, I found, and this is probably the single biggest thing for me, they're slower. I can't remember if I actually benchmarked this, but I'm pretty sure that for things like a Sparkle update or just generally downloading and uncompressing it, DMGs were almost always slower than zip files. I don't know if that's the verification process when it's going through the disk image or what, but zip files were always a lot faster and it just felt like a smoother experience for the user.
Yeah, well, it's funny to think back now. I also do all zip files now. I used to do DMG files, and I think it was one of those things where it just kind of felt like that's the standard, that's the status quo for the platform. So step up to the plate and do it as nicely designed DMG. You know, so for folks who don't remember or who don't know, DMG is a disk image format, and the benefit of it was that people would people still do it, of course, but the benefit is that you download it and it pops up a window in the Finder with your nicely designed icon. Often there's like some conventions, like often a sim link to the applications folder and maybe a background image on the window to say like, please drag this to your applications folder. So like lots of hand holding and like advice for naive users who might download the app and not understand how to drag an application to their disk.
Right.
Of course, part of the reasoning for that advice is that if the user doesn't drag the application to the disk, then it will no longer be accessible when they eject that virtual disk image.
Right.
So you have this like situation where theoretically this format of the DMG is for the ultimate simplicity user interface for users who might not otherwise have a complete handle on how to download software. But then there's all these flip sides to it that are possibly just as bad as not having the DMG in the first place. Because in practice, what I ran into was, for example, maybe some like old version of StuffIt Expander is somehow configured to be the handler for .dmg files. And then doesn't actually know how to open it. Maybe the user, this happened so much, maybe the user thinks, this is interesting. MarsEdit needs to have this special disk mounted on my computer where it keeps itself. So I better leave that there and not eject it.
Yeah. And they'll do things like drag the disk image to the dock just really confused about this is and where it needs to be stored.
Right. So there's all of these confusions. You're taking this assumption that you're helping naive users by giving them a simple package that makes it that makes it as though they had just put a disk into their disk drive, which nobody has anymore. and then expecting them to take that familiarity with this concept and treat it like a disk that can be ejected after copying the file off onto their own quote unquote own disk.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It turned out to be so much work. And then I think back on it, I think, oh, how much pain, how much work trying to like get the icons to show up in the right spot and the background image to draw in the right way. And what if the customer has the Finder configured in such a way that the sidebar somehow shows up on the window, and sometimes the status bar is visible at the bottom and sometimes it's not, but if it is, then maybe it nudges the background image off so that it looks ugly. And I just think, how many hours did I spend working on my disk image when I could have been working on my app?
Absolutely. I remember messing with that many hours trying to get that just right and testing it in different environments. And I'm not going to say it was all for nothing. That was the trend at the time. But a lot of people went even further, like in terms of trying. And again, this gets back to, you know, how many weird workarounds are you going to do for this supposedly simpler distribution? Like, people would, if you launch the app from the disk image, they would detect that and say, do you want to install it?
Oh, right.
Or do you want to, you know, copy it? And again, I mean, yeah, that sounds clever, but at some point you're putting too many band-aids on a solution that just doesn't honestly work that great. Much better to have a zip file. It unstuffs, unstuffs. I guess that shows my stuff at expander history in the back of my head somewhere. It unzips, it's right there. And if they want to run it from the desktop or the downloads folder, fine. You know, it's not going to hurt anything.
Yep. Now, to be fair, the zip file format also falls for this, fortunately, increasingly rare problem of being adopted by some old skanky extractor that somebody has on their system. The good news is for most naive users, I think they're using Safari to do the downloads.
Right.
And that actually does the zip decompression as part of the download. So
right.
It never has a chance to be opened by, you know, 1986's classic mode stuff at Expander that goes, you know, I don't know what the heck this new zip format is, but I'm willing to give it a shot.
Compact Pro launches and...
Right. Let's look at it from a point of view of, if we do have one of these naive users who downloads your zip file, well, they end up with this situation where Safari has a little magnifying glass to reveal the app in the Finder. Then they can double-click it to open it. The sort of worst-case scenario here is they end up running this app for the rest of their lives in the downloads folder, which for people who are so naive as to make that mistake, I don't think they're either bothered by it particularly. You know, it's like that. Yeah. Downloads is where I keep my apps. You know, that's where I keep all of my apps that came from the web. And it's not the worst way to live. It's not the way I would live, but.
And of course, in the Mac App Store world, you know, more and more users are going to have most of their apps automatically installed in the applications folder. If a couple aren't there, no harm. Hopefully they'll figure out and they can just drag the app in. And again, if you're distributing directly and in the Mac App Store, increasingly it's going to be, you know, fewer users that are going to run into this problem. So probably you shouldn't spend a whole lot of engineering effort working on this. I would say just use Zip and be done with it.
And there's sort of a third option, which some people still take, even though they don't need to, of course, which is the installer package.
Right. And related to that, one DMG advantage that people used to talk about is like a license agreement. So there's a way you can pop something up. This is still true, right?
Yep.
There's a way that you can pop up like a license agreement before it actually...
That's true. Yep.
Unzips the DMG. But again, I mean, that's... I can't even think of any apps I've seen that actually take advantage of that. So I don't know if that argument is super strong.
I see them... from time to time, I know, because it's the moment when you realize, I thought I downloaded this thing. Is it still downloading? And then you realize that, oh, it's actually in the background, stuck up there in the Finder with its stupid EULA request.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Frank, for the question. If anyone else has a question, feel free to email us at feedback@corint.org. Find us on Twitter @corint. Or we also have comments on the website. We've always had them. Sometimes people leave a comment or a question there. You're welcome to do that too. There's comments on each post on corint.org.
Okay, Manton. Well, I hope that next week we have less dramatic recap to discuss about servers being down and failed efforts to relax into Thanksgiving holiday. Here's to reminiscing next week about your surprise $1 million customer contract or something like that.
That would be great.
You know, I'm just going to predict that now, and then if I'm wrong, we'll just fudge it a little.
All right. Great. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. See you, Manton.